Blog Talk Radio.
You there, Joe?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Again, barely, man. I can barely hear you.
I'm having problems
with the blog talk radio. Wait, there we go. Try it again. That's a little bit better.
Hey, Jesse, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, all right, sorry about that. We are already live, so apologies to everyone for listening in for the technical difficulties. No formal introduction here. We'll go right into it. This is the Fens Nation radio show here on a Wednesday night, or a Tuesday night. Excuse me, I can't even get the days right. Parise Watch is throwing me off. I'm
Parise
joined by...
Parise is clearly responsible for these technical difficulties. There's absolutely no question. No question.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, I can't even get my calendar days right at this point, but... Anyway, we are here, and I'm Joe Depto. I'm joined tonight by my good friend, Jesse Marshall of the Face Off Factor. We're going to be breaking down pretty much everything. Going to be talking a little Parise, a little bit of Jágr, a little bit of everything going on in the NHL world involving free agency. So before we get to the big elephant in the room being Parise Watch, last year the big to-do about free agency when July 1st came around was Jágr Watch. And this year, the Dallas Stars got a little bit of their own version of Jágr Watch, signing Jaromír Jágr to a $4.5 million one-year deal. I was shocked when I saw the dollar figures, Jesse. I saw the stuff in the blog about how he was getting, how he was seeking $4 million a year. I did not think he would actually get it.
Yeah, I guess first of all, there's been, you can argue that the Dallas Stars have been the most active team up to this point. I mean, Riviera leaves, goes to Washington, they get Cody Eakin. I don't know if I would say I was shocked by the Ray Whitney deal, but, that's a lot of money they've invested a lot of money in older guys, that's for sure. So they pick up Whitney, they make the deal to send Steve Ott to New York, which obviously takes a little bit of, Buffalo, takes a little bit of grit out of their lineup. But, you take a look at their top six, Joe, it's really not that bad. Erickson, Ben, you've got now Jágr, Roy, Whitney. I mean, we're not going to talk about the other side of the puck, but, we'll see how that's going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch in the league next year. But let me ask you this question, and a lot of people have been talking to me about this today. Not even as a Penguin fan, but as a hockey fan in general, does this Jaromír Jágr, two-year money grab, does this affect your view of his legacy in the league?
It doesn't for me, but I can see why it would for others. Because to me, had Jágr played for, Pittsburgh past 2001, had he played for... I hate using comparisons to other sports, but this were like Brett Favre, where he played out his entire career with one team and decided to go to another at the last minute. And now I would think that. But he's done the Rangers thing, he's done the Capitals thing, he did the Flyers thing last year. I think we all know the guy enjoys the financial part of the game. He might even be a little hard up for that sort of thing at this point. So, I mean, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't tarnish the legacy, but. To be honest with you, I'm even still kind of surprised that we're talking about it, because I sort of expected Jágr to maybe get like a low ball offer somewhere, maybe from a team like the New York Islanders or something like that. I didn't expect him to get a big money deal because, he scored 19 goals last year. There's a couple guys on third lines around the league who scored as many goals as this guy, or was at least, as offensively productive as this guy was last
right.
year. So that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, and, you talk about the difference between the NHL and the KHL. It's the grind. And I think that even most Flyer fans would agree that when you get to the 60-game mark of the year, he wasn't the, night-in, night-out kind of guy, shift by shift. So age is a factor there, but the physicality level in the National Hockey League is not matched anywhere else in the world. So we'll see if that one year – and a decent run into the playoffs will actually, change things for next year. But, for Dallas, I mean, I guess if you have the money to spend, if they're not in this Parise sweepstakes, there's a lot of other, the Shane Doan waiting to the ninth, and for Doan, I don't know that he'd want to go there, having that, played against Dallas so much and being so loyal to Phoenix. I think it's East or bust for him. But there wasn't a lot out there. So, Joe Neuwendijk said today he was looking at his depth chart on the chalkboard and said, hey, you know, we already have, you know, five forwards that are pretty powerful. You guys have figured that, you know, one of the best players of all time would fit in there pretty well. So he can still play. You know, the West, I think, may suit him a little bit more, Joe, with the, you know, I'm not saying it's not a physical style of hockey over there, but, you know, playing in the Atlantic Division is a whole nother bag of cookies. So, it's like I said, Dallas is going to be the team that I'm watching pretty closely next year. You know, last night, another one, we talked about the Panthers. You know, there's a couple other young teams out there. Chicago, or, Colorado's obviously one now, but that I'm watching Dallas next year. That top six could do a lot of damage. Like we said, the defensive side of the puck is a whole other story. But as far as teams that have vastly changed their makeup so far this offseason, they're number one on the list.
Yeah, they really are putting some money out there. And to me, they're an interesting team because of, you know, kind of how you were talking about different divisions and different conferences. The fact that they play in that Pacific Division really intrigues me, because the Phoenix Coyotes, you know, I think for the most part were the best team in that Pacific Division, at least, you know, up until the postseason started, and even during a lot of the postseason. Los Angeles was a team that, you know, they got on fire and they went on that, you know, just wildfire blaze in the postseason, and obviously winning a championship. But a lot of people, despite that fact, have forgotten that this team barely got into the postseason. And, you know, you can call it the coaching change, call it Jeff Carter being acquired, or, you know, however you want to spin it. They're really not a drastically different team heading into next year. Now, they've got all their guys locked up. San Jose, there's just so much missing from that hockey club right now. So when you factor in all these teams and where they are, Anaheim still is an absolute dumpster fire at the moment when you look at their roster, especially on the back end. But, I mean, getting Brian Allen helps, but that's a different story. But anyway, you know, when you look at where Dallas fits in to the Pacific Division, if they can get the help on the back end you're talking about, and Kari Lehtinen can come in and have a really solid year, to have a year kind of like Mike Smith had with Phoenix last year, and we all know he's got that talent. If he can do that, I mean, I don't see why Dallas can't get into the postseason and you know, kind of run through that division and be just as successful as any of those other teams are.
Yeah, and they weren't that far off last year. They lost some multi-point games late in the season, you know, against teams that they were running against, and it killed them. But they're well-run. I mean, Joe Nieuwendijk, I mean, he's not given any of us a reason to doubt what he's doing. You know, they always say that being that team that is just outside of making the playoffs but not in the draft lottery is just a purgatory. And you know, they seem to be climbing out of it. But, you know, we mentioned a second ago that, you know, this signing may have made sense to them because you look across the board, you know, I mean, you got Semin's name up there, which is, we'll talk about in a second. But, I mean, really, when you remove the Parise and the Suter from this free agent class, if you haven't made a move already, outside of a handful of guys, you know, you're probably reaching at this point, which is why I think that once at least the Parise chip falls, you know, Suter's probably not too far behind, and then I think we'll just see an avalanche after that. But, you know, if you remove Parise and Suter, Joe, who's left right now at the top of your board in your top three? And, you know, how is this going to be one of those things where before the big chips fall, it's just going to be stagnant?
It feels that way, doesn't it? I mean, it has that feel. You know, all the reports out of Columbus seem to be that that's what's holding up any kind of Nash deal as well. But, you know, to answer your question, when you take a look at this free agent board and you knock off Ryan Suter and Parise, like you were saying, I'm still very interested on what Shane Doan does. We were just talking about him. I'm still very interested to see if Philadelphia cannot bring in Ryan Suter. And by all intents and purposes, it seems like Detroit is still the front runner for Suter, but again, with the way this thing is going, that can change. I'm interested to see if Philadelphia would bring back Matt Carl and at what price. And even though he's gotten a lot of negative press, I think Alex, what happens to Alex Semin is extremely interesting to me, because I feel like Alex Semin getting a contract, if he would come onto a team like Detroit or a team like that, I think that that could really work out well. But I think if the wrong team makes the wrong decision on him, signs him to a long-year deal, you know, a long-term deal with a really gaudy annual cap hit, I feel like he could just absolutely destroy a locker room chemistry. So he's such a boom or bust free agent. He's got so much freakish innate talent. I'm interested to see what team kind of takes a chance on him, because Detroit has got the cap space and they've got a need up front. So I'm thinking that that's where he's going to end up.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things too where you think about him as a player, and you know, this adage is existing out there that Dale Hunter was able to do great things with him. I don't know that I'm going to go that far. And I think about, well, what if Ray Shero signed him to like a 1 or 2 year deal and said, hey, you know, show everybody what you can do here for a, you know, half decent, you know, maybe 4 or 5 million. My initial reaction is, regurgitation, but then you think about it. And I mean, here's a guy who, you know, on a good year is giving you 40 without a lot of effort, you know. He makes it look easy, but is it worth the sacrifice that you give up on the other side of the ice? And specifically, and this is in reference to Pittsburgh first, the amount of, you know, the requirement that exists there of, the, you know, getting on your horse and participating in the forecheck. You don't get to opt out of that in this system. You know, in Pittsburgh, you don't get to just skate your way into the offensive zone and provide some token pressure. Everybody has got to go 100% into that glass. So that's one issue. But now on the flip side of that, let's talk about Detroit. We know what kind of system Mike Babcock runs. So, you know, if you're playing the wing there, you got a lot of work to do. And you better be in the neutral zone when that team gets the puck. So if that is the case, one of the most interesting things to watch next year is going to be Mike Babcock's relationship with Alex Semin. Because that's either going to work or it's not. You can lead the horse to water, you know, all that stuff. It's up to him. So at this point, we haven't seen it. And now, you know, after a one-year deal where he came in and probably had a mediocre performance even by his standards last season, he's playing for a job. I mean, now that's excluding the whole talk about the KHL possibility with him. But, you know, he's playing for a job in the National Hockey League. So this is it, and I think that if Detroit gets him and they go long term with him, that I think it's a huge risk. If there's no amnesty clause in the new CBA, you're going to be stuck with that. And again, can you teach a player like that to just become defensively responsible overnight? You know, maybe Washington's not the best proving ground to show that you can play really good, you know, really well at both ends of the ice. But like I said, if he ends up in Detroit, that's going to be something I'm going to be paying close attention to next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at it on paper, and him playing with a guy like Pavel Datsyuk, I mean, you know, you line that up, and on paper, and I'm emphasizing that part, that looks like just an absolute gold situation for him, especially if they would put, you know, Franzen would be healthy or on the left wing, or if they would be, you know, having a situation to where they would have Zetterberg on the line creating space for him and using his tremendous arsenal of skill. I mean, there's a lot of options there. But to me, you know, I take a look at what Semin is going to want, and he's going to want a long-term deal. And Detroit, you know, they've been winning for so long, and they haven't exactly done that through free agency. They've never really been a team that consistently year in and year out likes to hand out those kind of deals. You know, maybe if they decide to pass on him, do you think there's any kind of outside chance that if Alex Semin doesn't receive the deal he wants by a certain time, that the KHL comes back into play?
I think so, for certain. I mean, you have to think, Joe, that they already have – they've already contacted him. I mean, I would be amazed if he hasn't been contacted by a team over there at this point. That would be a shock to me. So you got to think that there's already been a seed planted there. And if he doesn't get that deal, you know, we get into the end of July here, moving in, you know, towards camp. But he's going to be out of here. You know, he can make a nice tax-free coin over there and, play on that bigger ice and, you know, score 50 goals and, have that pressure taken off of him, you know. So that's a big – and we mentioned Shane Doan a second ago, and I wanted to mention that because it sounds like he's waiting to the ninth. Obviously, the financial future of the Coyotes is in total jeopardy, but you're talking about a guy who's played every game of his NHL career for that franchise. You know, that's a pretty big deal. You know, obviously you got to think he's going to give the Coyotes first shot. Number one, I think that my perception of him changed after the whole handshake debacle. I think
right.
everybody had this vision of what Shane Doan was. And I think that that was a lot of pent up frustration over a lot of losing and having made it that far and not having anything to show for it. But, regardless, this is now, outside of Parise, probably the most interesting forward left in terms of talent. Older, yes, can still play. He's the type of guy you want to have in your room, too, by all standards, at least what we know. Great character guy. And especially if you have a younger group of forwards, I don't necessarily think that applies to Penguins anymore, but, a couple years ago, maybe that would have been the typical ratio signing, the Gary Roberts type ilk with a little bit more skill. But, here's a guy who can – you put him on a talented roster, get him with a couple top quality players, and you're still getting a lot of points out of him. So I think that the most intriguing part of this, and you could kind of connect this to Parise, New Jersey and their financial history too, but what is the Phoenix spending limit here, right? You can't think he's going to get – this probably might be his last contract. I'm sure he's probably going to want to work it out that way. He's not going to want to switch teams again. So you're going to get him for a couple years. It's going to take a decent coin. But, how much can the Phoenix Coyotes actually afford to pay him? They've lost a lot, and they're not in cap issues. But, can they afford to spend this? And if there's a bidding war that develops here and we get to the ninth and the price is going up and up, you got to think that now it's going to become harder for him to take that deal that keeps him with the team that he's been with his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in that organization for such a long time. And by the way, for listeners out there, if they have any take on, what we're talking about or anything that they, want to ask us and break it down, the call-in number for tonight's show is 347-202-0344. Once again, that is 347-202-0344. Like you said, he's played with that team his entire career. He's been with the organization, dating all the way back to 95, 96 when they were still the Jets. And I have to imagine, people keep talking about Parise and wanting to win and wanting to get that cup and that being such a big factor into it. I have to imagine that somewhere, just like you were talking about that pent-up frustration that Shane Doan had, I have to imagine that somewhere deep in his psyche, he has to think, okay, if Pittsburgh would miss out on Zach Parise, I can be to the Penguins what Bill Guerin was in the 2009 run. I can be Bill Guerin plus if I need to be because, Guerin was in his last year, that last full season that he came back, he was really a power play specialist as much as anything, really. And I think age had really affected him that last season. I still think Doan is a little bit, I don't want to say younger, because obviously, he's in that age bracket, but I think physically he's got a little bit less wear and tear on him than Bill Guerin did when he was acquired. And I think the team's locker room kind of misses that. I mean, there's a lot of Stanley Cup final experience in that room. There's a lot of playoff experience. At the same time, those guys are really young, and I think that they would benefit from having a presence come in. Not saying Steve Sullivan wasn't that last year, but I don't think Steve Sullivan's really going to knock anybody around and set the tone physically while at the same time being a big vocal presence in the locker room at the same time.
Yeah, and to just piggyback off what you said, something interesting that Mike Colligan talked about on Twitter on Sunday and leading into this whole thing was, don't forget that a couple years ago, Dan Bylsma called Mike Knubel and asked him to come play here. That was a pretty big deal at the time, and I had forgotten all about that. But Mike Colligan, pointed out that that Bylsma had made that call, which is a testament to, I think, the fact that the Penguins like to have that older, lean on me presence in there. You said there's a lot of guys on the team that have won a cup, but experience is never a detriment. For any club, so you know, there's a couple of names to kind of keep in the back of your head there. I guess, Joe, we might as well just dive right into this whole Zach Parise thing and just get it over with. I personally got to tell you, I'm not involved in this process. I have absolutely no stake in it whatsoever other than the fact that I happen to enjoy the Pittsburgh Penguins. But this is mentally draining. And I really, you know, the last 2 days, you know, especially when the whole Parise is going to talk to reporters in 5 minutes thing went on, that 28 minutes that elapsed from the five-minute announcement to the time, it might probably be actually longer than that, from the five-minute announcement to the time that it said, actually, you know what, never mind, he's just going to go home. It was just unbelievable. That 30 minutes felt like 8 hours. You know, I was just sitting there refreshing over and over and over again. I thought Twitter was going to break, but I think the number one thing that needs to be addressed first is this is a life-changing decision. And I made a comment to someone today that I said, you know, imagine if, you know, you've been working at your job for a really long time, and that was the first job that you ever had, and they took really good care of you, and you were really important. But then at one time, five other companies contacted you, and they were offering you a lot of money. What are you going to do? You know, it's not something that you're just going to be like, well, nope, 12 o'clock on a Sunday, I think I'm going to do this. You know, that doesn't exactly work that way. So, you know, you see a lot of this this negative press now towards Parise, not just from opposing fan bases screaming out, you know, if you sign here, I'm going to kill myself, but also, too, with, you know, just now what his personality is now coming into question. Look, there's a lot of money here, and there's a, you know, there are options to win on the table. There are options to go home and be with your family and cornerstone a franchise on the table. And then there's the option to, you know, make last the relationships you've already made with some pretty important people and a team that you're just coming off the chance to win the Stanley Cup with. This is by no means a decision that somebody should be making in a rush. And I think the number one thing that needs to be addressed, which I'm sure you'll agree with, is Zach Parise, probably one of the best, most stand-up guys in the game. So he could take to August for all I care, and I feel like he's earned that, which is probably the first thing we need to talk about.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I totally agree with you 100%. I mean, as a fan, it's frustrating, you know, to sit there and refresh it over and over, but you know, that's just the hockey fan side coming out. The only thing that I can see, you know, there's two kind of things, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I don't want to look at this, you know, from a glass half empty perspective. But there's two things to me that stick out to this. These teams, you know, these organizations, Lou Lamoriello, Ray Shiro, Chuck Fletcher, you know, all these guys, the ownership in these organizations, in Pittsburgh, we all know the names there. I don't have to say them, but you know, when you make an offer, and the reports have said that some of these offers could be cracking $100 million, that's a lot of money to be hanging out over there. You know, that would be like if I come to you and hand you a $100 million check, and then, you know, you come back and say, okay, I'm going to cash it on Sunday. And you come back on Sunday and say, oh, I'm not ready to cash yet. I'm not sure because Nick is offering me, he's giving me a $100 million check too, and I don't know whose I want to cash. I'm sure that's got to be very frustrating from a business point of view and having that much money hanging out in the air. And the other thing that I really am thinking about is when I hear him say this stuff about how he really hasn't had his family with him and his agents are, you know, giving him angles that he never really saw before. I know this is his, you know, kind of first introduction to this whole process, but this guy really seems poorly prepared to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, normally you expect this kind of thing, and I don't think there was like a super early indication from the Devils that they were going to try to sign him before July 1st, because this, if you remember, when the Penguins made the Staal trade, the first thing out of Pierre McGuire's mouth was, here comes Zach Parise, right? So this is not, I don't think that going to July 1st blindsided him. But I think that when the offers flowed in, and you got to figure, Joe, he probably got one from all 30 teams, right? I mean,
Right.
Even teams that weren't in a position to sign him, I'm sure, were at least contacting him. So you get this influx of dials. You know, these top contenders emerge. And when you really whittle it down, you know, we've heard Chicago's involved. That was a late Monday development. Philadelphia's name still gets brought up. My opinion on that, Joe, it's to drive the price up and nothing more. But there's an offer out there from them. You've got Detroit's name being brought up as a team that may be still involved. Obviously, the Minnesota Wild. New Jersey, obviously, and then Pittsburgh. So this thing is wide open. And we talked earlier about how nothing could occur until from now and, you know, until you go all the way through one of these two guys signing and another guy, I mean Suter. But there's a lot of money on the table. You already mentioned it. And New Jersey, although their financial situation there is maybe what Zach Parise is waiting on in the first place, that's been something people have been speculating. But it's very much in question. But that being said, it's not a bad hockey team. I mean, they just came back from the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, you know, the Kings, they put up the most respectable fight of any team in the postseason against them. There's something to be said for that. So it's not as if by staying in New Jersey, Zach Parise is locking himself into some situation where he can't win. You know, so that needs to be addressed first. And then also, don't forget, Minnesota was pretty good for 30 games last year. Now, that's okay, 30 games. That's not half a season. But there's something over there. You don't just happen to cruise through the first part of the regular season in first place in the National Hockey League by accident. So kudos to Mike Gill and Chuck Fletcher. But they want to put something together up there. And, you know, obviously, you take a look at that's his home state. I mean, he's already snubbed the state once when he made his decision about where he was going to go to college. So there's that. And then obviously, you know, there's Pittsburgh and the opportunity to play alongside the best player in the world for a really long time. So by no means should this be an easy decision. And, I think most people, again, like you said, it's the hockey fan and people coming out where they're like, you know, just get this over with already. Easier said than done. But I guess let's start with the obvious team in the Penguins. If this signing doesn't happen, Joe, this is probably the most pertinent question to be asked. If this signing does not occur, how bad off are the Penguins, if at all?
Well, I don't think they're necessarily bad off. I mean, I think that you have a team with Fleury, Letang, Sidney Crosby, who's, you know, by all intents and purposes, looking to play his first full season in some time. You know, I think that people sort of overlook that when they take a look at the Pittsburgh roster, is that Sidney Crosby hasn't been in a situation to where he could play a full season in a long time. And I have to imagine that he's going to come out. I mean, in the last 2 out of 3 years, the Penguins have been knocked out in the first round, and the other time they were bumped out by an 8 seed on the Montreal Canadiens in the very last game ever played in Mellon Arena. So I have to imagine he's pretty ticked off and ready to go. They've still got Chris Kunitz. Pascal Dupuis is a very nice complimentary piece on any line you want to put him. James Neal and Evgeny Malkin together showed this fantastic chemistry, you know, throughout the whole season, and that chemistry was very consistent. Those two really didn't die off one another. The only question that I would have in Pittsburgh, two. And one is the back end. It has to be tightened up. I think we saw that. I don't, you know, how does that, the absence of Zed Mikhaljevic, him leaving, how does that affect the defensive chemistry? Does it improve it? Does it make it worse? What if Simone Dupre gets a full-time shot? How does that affect the way things work? You know, what kind of player is he going to be over the course of a full season if he does make the team? But also up front, how does the PK work without Jordan Staal? I mean, I think we all know that Brandon Sutter seems like he's going to be a heck of a player in his own right, and he certainly has really looked the part down in Carolina. He's very young. His best days are likely ahead of him. He could score 40 to 50 points in Pittsburgh, you know, if his line mates step up. But there, you know, even if Parise does not come into town and sign with Pittsburgh, he decides to sign with Minnesota or go back to Jersey or whatever, there are going to be some significant questions in that Pittsburgh locker room, especially with the fact that they're playing in this division to where if Parise goes back to Jersey, they're absolutely still in a situation to where they can win. New York might be better this year than they were last year. And Philadelphia, even though they have some huge questions of their own, still have a lot of strength and can still do a lot of big things up front. And then the Islanders, I think, are only going to get better this season than they were last year. So they're playing in the toughest division in the NHL, in my opinion. So they've got a lot of questions that aren't just going to be answered by Zach Parise coming on board. And I'm sure Ray Shiro understands that as well.
Yeah, when the Staal trade happened, you know, it took all of 10 seconds for Pierre Maguire to launch us into the ride of our lives. I think when I initially thought about it, you know, you think Zach Parise, you think hard work, character, a guy who brings it every shift, talented offensive player, and a guy who benefits from playing with a guy like Sidney Crosby. And when he's healthy, it doesn't get any better than that. Okay. The period. So you look at the idea of those guys being able to play the game together is tantalizing in and of itself. But you already hit the nail on the head. You look past it, look past that, and this team is still offensively probably the biggest threat in the National Hockey League. Unless the Oilers absolutely blow the lid off of it this year, but they've got two of the top best players in the world, so it's not a necessity, right? And we already mentioned that the reason this team did not play all the way into June is because of the back end, point blank period. There's no two ways about it. They did not get the job done in their own zone. The penalty kill was atrocious, and the team was not prepared to play that series. Daniel Briere scored that goal, and that was all she wrote. So, you know, you don't have to insert Zach Parise to just fix the Penguins. Offensively, are there holes to fill? Yeah, we're going to have to figure something out there. But there's still some things that can be done through trade and maybe internally that you could address that. But they don't need Zach Parise by any stretch of the imagination. But now that we've gotten ourselves so entangled with this, the idea of not having him almost seems like, well, what are we going to do now? You know, now what's going to happen? Now we're not going to sign Zach. You know, you almost lose sight of the fact that Gino is coming off of an Art Ross trophy and Sidney Crosby's ready to play a full season, like you said. So, it's one of those things where, the idea behind it is so, I mean, you could have, first of all, Crosby, Parise, Malkin, Neal. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's every one of those players has potential to score 40 goals. You see a lot of teams kind of, puff their chest out and say, well, we have 620 goal scorers on this team. Okay, we got 440 goal scorers, So, I mean, you're putting yourself right in an entirely different realm. That's a whole other universe, of offensive production. And all week long, we've been making the comparison to the Penguins of the early 90s, where God bless Tom Barrasso. He was a great goaltender, but that defense is more concerned about scoring goals. And that's the way they beat you. You may get five in, but when another team's scoring seven and they're just exerting sheer will over you offensively, your hands are tied. So, the idea itself is tantalizing enough, but I think that we lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, when Zach Parise puts that pen on that paper, the Penguins still have Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby on their team. So, that nothing's changing that at this point. And I think that despite the fact that the idea of somebody who can come in and score like Zach Parise, as analyzing that as that is, we're still going to end up better off than maybe even the team that ends up with them in the first place.
Right, definitely. And we do have a caller on the line from the 724 area code. Caller, give us your name, where you're calling from. Thanks for calling the Penn Nation Radio Show.
What's up, boys? It's Derek from the Penn's Blog.
Oh, Derek, how you doing, buddy?
How's it going, Derek?
Good, man. Good. I just saw Jesse's tweet about how it's what Parise's done to mental stability. I think everything that Jesse just said is so true. But like the whole thing, I think the mental issue of it here is like watching people, especially on Twitter, complaining about us complaining that he hasn't signed or whatever. It's like a vicious back and forth. I think they just want it to end more than anything.
Yeah, it's kind of the timeline of events was kind of like you know, when you got into Monday afternoon and whenever he said, you know, I'm going to go home, people really started to complain. Like, there was a lot of complaining. And then the complaining lasted so long. And, you know, and it never relented that then you developed this whole new faction of people that were complaining about the people complaining. And then after that went on for a while, then you had a new faction of people that came up that just wanted to point out the fact that people were complaining about other people complaining.
Yeah, it's like nothing I've really ever seen. At this point, I don't really care where he signed. I just want it to end and just everybody can just move on for the rest of our existence here in the summer, and we can just, you know, get on with it. I mean, in the end, I don't know.
Okay, I think we're back to the technical difficulties.
No, I got you. Is Derek still with us?
No, he just got his call dropped. So,
let me just mention real quick here. Yeah, Derek, call us back if you can. But I just want to mention that probably one of the most underrated aspects to following Pittsburgh Penguins hockey on Twitter is Derek's daily journey to the bus. I really enjoy that part of the day. You know, normally I'll go outside at work and have a cigarette, you know, day is winding down, then you pull Twitter up and you say, oh, Derek's on the bus. So always a really awesome experience to witness him live tweet that. And I knew literally when the whole Parise 5 minutes to reporters thing happened, Derek was on the bus. And perhaps the funniest aspect of all of that was Derek simply said, on the bus, can't say a word, going insane. So it's like, you know, if you're familiar with Derek's fun public transportation issues, that was just perfect timing. It was a comedic fate orchestrated a fantastic tweet there. So, but anyway, yeah, I guess you have to agree with him, Joe. At this point, I kind of just want this whole thing to be over with.
Yeah, definitely. We had another call on the line. Let's see if this is him calling back. Caller on the line.
Yeah, hey guys, sorry.
That's all right.
Very ironic. I mean, I don't want to sabotage your show and hijack it, but one other point, and I don't know if you guys saw what Mike Holligan was saying earlier today. Actually, he just tweeted it. And his source is saying that the Devils have borrowed $20 million from the NHL pretty much in the past week. So I think if anything, if you point to anything, I think it's maybe the fact that Parise is kind of waiting on the Devils. So I think that's where we're at. I just want this whole thing to be over, and I don't think he's coming to the Penguins. I just don't see it happening. That's my take.
Do you guys think that there will be this boo faction among Penguins fans? Like, if he comes to town and he doesn't sign here, is that going to happen? Do you think that's like a possibility?
Oh God, yeah.
yeah. It's just the way Pittsburgh works, man. I mean, it's just the nature of Pittsburgh sports fans. I mean, there's a lot about Pittsburgh that I love. Don't get me wrong. It's my hometown and everything, and I love that part. But there's always going to be somebody who, you know, you just hear them on Root Sports. Parise, you were Jagoff, you know, something like that. You know, it's just the way it works, man. People are going to be pissed about it, and you know, they're going to take it personally. I mean, if you have people taking it personally that he didn't sign on July 2nd, they're definitely going to take it personally if he signs somewhere else.
Just imagine. That's going to be a nightmare. That's going to be an absolute nightmare. Ah, good times. This is so much more annoying than last year. You know?
Oh, it's off the charts compared to it. I mean,
last year was quick and painless. Done. It was done. It was like pulling a Band-Aid off.
Right. I mean, you knew where Talbot and Yager were going. I mean, by 3-4 o'clock, you knew that, you know, it was just kind of like it came in, it was done, like you said, and it moved on. The whole thing is this is dragging out. And even if it would have been you know, quick. I think Parise, you know, even with the history of Jágr and the dichotomy of fans that love him and hate him, I think that the fact that Parise is such a big-time all-world player, and there really aren't a lot of times that your team, especially Pittsburgh, not being like a Toronto or New York or having this, you know, just big boatload of cash to throw around, they don't really get in a situation to where they can land the big top prize on the market, an all-world player like that, a wing. You know, people have been talking about the wing for Crosby for, God, since the day one of the guy that was drafted, and he made Andy Hilbert look tolerable. I mean, you know, ever since that, you know, people have been talking about it, and now they have kind of the end game of wingers in the NHL, pretty much the perfect fit for 87 on that top line. And now you hear this stuff like Derek was talking about the Jersey Devils wanting to get like a $20 million loan, and the NHL might be taking over their team, you know, to an extent, helping them out and everything like that. And Lou Lamoriello was guilding them back into it. I mean, it's just been a head rush of so many emotions. Monday, I was all in. Monday, I'm glued to my computer monitor, hitting the F5 button like a maniac. Today, I'm just like, oh, God, just get this thing over with. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, somebody said to me, I thought it was hilarious. Someone said to me on Monday, I was like, man, this is what, this, I can't even say it without laughing. This is what it felt like to, like, message a cute girl on MySpace and you have to wait for a message back. You know, like, yeah, it totally is, you know. It totally is. But anyway, moving on from Zach Parise, if he doesn't sign, now we move straight into Ryan Suter. Ryan Suter is apparently posted up in, like, a cabin in the woods. He's like listening to John Denver or something and meditating, and there's incense. This is going to take a long time, right? I mean, it really is. The Suter thing is going to be even more agonizing for people. But number one, I don't think he comes to the Eastern Conference. I just don't. I don't think it's going to happen. And you know, he wants a term. He wants money. He wants front-loaded contracts. The Detroit Red Wings have $100 million. To sign three players. It's $24 million for four, to be specific, not including what they've already done. I have to recalculate that. But I just don't see a way he's coming to the East. And although that, you know, he might be the cure-all for the Penguins on the defensive side of the puck, I just don't see it happening. I don't know. Is anybody, Joe, Derek, either one of you guys kind of feel differently than that?
Man, there's too many bizarre pictures of him and a guitar on the internet, first of all. what's he doing? I mean, he has, there's like at least 3 to 4 pictures of him in the Grand Ole Opry taking a picture.
He's on a legit,
is he ready to play?
He's on a legit spiritual journey.
I kind of keep going back to that scene in the movie Walk the Line where Johnny Cash is, like, on the tractor, and he's, like, going up the hill, but it's ready to fall back down. Like, I'm just picturing Ryan Suter. Detroit, damn it, I don't know where to sign. You know, him falling back on
like
that tractor.
It's like a scene in Young Guns where they eat the peyote, you know, and Ryan Suter down on the farm. You got to see the size of that chicken. You know, it's a really bizarre thing. You know, look at the disconnect between the NBA and the NHL. LeBron James, the decision, right? ESPN hosts it. Boys and Girls Club of America, right? Most watched show in the history of television. This one city just devastated emotionally, and Ryan Suter's in a barn out in the middle of nowhere taking a picture at the Grand Ole Opry. His agent's on the phone, but I don't know where he is.
It's so true. What is he farming for? I mean, the guy's a millionaire, first of all. I mean, what's he doing on a tractor? Why? Why would you subject yourself to
that? It's like Roethlisberger in the motorcycle. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's Suter, Ryan Suter in the tractor incident. Like, there's going to be like a John Deere clause in the contract wherever he goes.
That's just endorsement money right there. Forget Reebok.
That is. I got an amazing video. I got an amazing image in my mind of Ryan Suter like under the 10th Street Bridge is colliding with a car on a tractor.
He's driving up to the arena with it and up the, you know, just pulling up Center Avenue, coming up on that thing. Like when they do the red carpet.
He's got a signal
event.
With his hand. He's got to throw the hand signals out that the bicyclist is.
Oh my God.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, we basically just summed that whole situation up. I mean, this is honestly the most bizarre thing I've ever witnessed. And it's so funny because, like, people are, like, leaking these Parise updates, you know, like, he's at the airport, you know, and, like, that Russo guy from the Minnesota Trib was all over it.
Yeah,
today. Just unbelievable job, unbelievable work. You know, he's, like, talking to Parise in the airport, and then every time you see Drager or Ray Ferraro or, you know, Duffy or any of these guys, McKenzie, tweet something, they always end every tweet with, nobody knows where Ryan Suter is. You know, like, we're not even going to mention Ryan Suter because it's not even worth talking about at this point. So, you know, I guess, you know, and then here's the other thing. You know, a lot of people are bringing up that they maybe, like, aren't cahoots. You know, like, they, you know, I already mentioned this on Twitter, like, they form, like, a faction. And one's not going to go somewhere until the other one does, you know. So, like, this New Jersey thing falls through, and then Parise is like, well, I'm not going to play in Pittsburgh either. I'm going to Detroit, you know, or something like that. And Suter's going to be like, yeah, me too. You know, and this is going to go together. So, you know, this could be September. It could be Labor Day before we find out what's going on with these guys.
I don't know. Did you guys see? Did you see what Josh Reimer said?
No.
Josh Reimer. He's the guy. The guy that, I mean, he's pretty connected. I mean, he went through that whole Crosby thing, and he was kind of dead on about that.
Right.
But he had like some bizarre radio show where he talked to Zach Parise, and Parise basically. He was quoted saying, you know, I'd love to play with Ryan Suter. To get an opportunity to play with him would be great, basically. And he said that he planned on talking to him tonight. So I think there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? I mean, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah, it seemed like the Detroit was, the way I understand, I was reading some, you know, links that pop up in these days. There's every reporter and their mom wants to throw their two cents in. But it just seemed like, that from what I was hearing, I kept seeing 13-year deal over and over and over. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, Detroit offering him a $13 million deal. I know he wants to go there, and I know he wants to win, but that's such a weird – that's got to be such a weird situation for a Nashville fan, especially when you go back to that Nashville-Detroit series and you have Shea Weber – just shoving Henrik Zetterberg's head into the glass, WWE style, you know, on like a turnbuckle. And then you're a Nashville Predators fan, and, you know, they're a small market team, but they've got some solid fans. And they're sitting there hanging on to Suter like, please come back to us. And then he ends up signing with that team. And, you know, he's playing with Henrik Zetterberg the next year. He's on a 13-year deal. God knows what Detroit's going to be like once age really starts to catch up big time with Datsyuk and Zetterberg. It's a really, really weird situation with Suter. I don't think we're going to see anything. He's apparently filming Into the Wild 2 instead of, you know, trying to figure out where he wants to play. So I don't know if we're going to get any kind of decision.
These are the Bear Grylls. They're out there in the wild. They're surviving.
Your dad's doing those terrible deodorant commercials.
Yeah. Oh, awful. Awful.
Put on the main
just to say it, though, I mean, it's not going to happen. The Penguins can't pull something like this off unless Paul Martin's salary is out the door.
And then some.
Exactly. I mean, another thing is they both want front-loaded deals, so it's not even logistically possible, you know. But imagine that. I mean, if Parise comes to the Penguins, you know, instant. I mean, you already are going to get Penguins instant, you know, favorite to win the Cup without him. You know, we're going to be a favorite to win without him. But if they get him, you're putting Pittsburgh at the top of everybody's list. But if they had the ability to do both, I mean, you're talking, it's the South Beach of hockey. It'd just be, forget it. It'd be over. It would not, don't even play
the season. Do they win 60 games next year? If by somehow some bizarre a ratio pulls this one off and he gets Parise and Suter, I mean, do you guys even realize how insufferable every game will be next year if they lose one game? It'll be the end of the world. I don't know how, as a fan base, we'd survive that. I don't know.
It'd be unbelievable.
You're adding, and not only Parise, you know, and not only Suter in that situation, you're adding a significant piece to all three phases of the lineup. You're adding up front, you're adding Parise. On the back end, you're adding Suter. And it doesn't sound like it's a huge name compared to those, but getting Thomas Vokoun, you know, you added the biggest name of each position. You added the biggest forward on the market. You added the biggest goalie on the market. You added the biggest defenseman on the market. The team's been bumped out the first round 2 years in a row. The last time it was by the rival, and I think most people expected Pittsburgh to come in and not blow Philly out, but I think that most people expected Pittsburgh to go there and make a deep playoff run. There are no more excuses left. You can't put the blame on Kennedy, or you can't put the blame on Martin from Hollick or whoever the hell you want to blame. You can't do that anymore. I mean, it's just in a situation to where if you bring these guys in, there's just no more excuses. We're going to lose the live portion of the show. We're going to keep going onto the podcast. You can hear that by going to thepensnation.com, subscribing to iTunes, all that sort of thing. We're going to keep going for a little while. So thanks, everyone, who tuned in to the live portion. Head over to iTunes. You can download the rest. But anyway, yeah, there's no more excuses left at that point. There's really nothing more you can say or anything more you can do. I mean, the roster is as fleshed out as it's going to be. In the Stanley, in the Salary Cup era, I haven't seen a team this stacked. This is like early 90s Penn stuff all over again.
One of two things would happen. They'd do what Derek said, they'd win 60 games, or everyone would get hurt.
Yeah.
God,
I feel like that's the only two possibilities at this point. That would be it. So let me ask you this question. With the Penguins' blue line, let's assume that for a minute, nobody gets added outside of Zach Parise. So you maybe go into the year with, we'll say, Orpik Letang, Martin Niskanen, and Englund, and maybe Dupre, right? That's your top six. Lovejoy number seven. Right, exactly. So how big of an out is the defense for the whole thing, you know, the fan base in general? But in what way did expectations change just by adding that one piece?
They increase. I mean, there's no doubt about that they increase, but they're probably not as big as if they were to add, you know, any kind of position like that. But to me, if they can't sign Suter, and I don't think there's really any shot in hell of getting both of these guys, I know the whole thing back on draft night with Rossi talking about Keith Yandel and all that stuff like that, but given Yandel's cap hit and the fact that Phoenix has definitely wanted to trade him, I don't see why Pittsburgh can't call them and get right back into that. If cap hit isn't even $5.5 million, I mean, you include Paul Martin in the deal. Even if you have to give up a big-time defensive prospect, if God knows the Pens have plenty of them to go around, if you do that, the salary already cancels itself out. Martin's got a $5 million cap at this year.
I agree with that. I mean, I think a guy like Yandel is – I mean, I don't know how good this defense is, guys. Like, I just don't – there's such a breakdown in that whole Philly series, just watching that. And now another fact, I mean – I don't know what you guys feel about McCulloch, but, I mean, I would venture to say he was pretty much their best defensive defenseman when he was on. I think he had, like, some kind of bizarre struggles, you know? But, I mean, looking at the stats, I mean, he blocked more shots than anybody on that team last year. And the guy was a shutdown. And you look what the Phoenix GM said. You know, the guy's a shutdown defenseman. I mean, he'll thrive. There's a reason he got a big money contract. So, I mean – you know, you're kind of left with, I don't know. I mean, you have all these prospects coming, but, I mean, you're kind of weak, you know. I don't know. Interesting point by Nick, too. He just tweeted us, and he said that the Penguins would actually have the best three hockey players from each continent.
Yeah, Malkin, U.S., Crosby. Canada, and Russia, yep.
Pretty
That'd
cool,
be
actually.
That would be unbelievable. Yeah, I mean,
That's
I don't crazy. Know – There's still, and we talked about this, Joe, there's still, like, the option for picking up a defenseman is not gone by any stretch of the imagination. You know, there's still stuff out there. I mean, Carlo Koliakovo is a guy that I always mention, you know, not a guy that's going to draw a lot of attention, but if you're looking for a guy to anchor the third pairing, you know, that's certainly an adequate pickup. You know, so you've got that. And in terms of what's available. You know, the pickings are kind of slim defensively, but they obviously have the opportunity to shore up the blue line. This is my next question for you guys. Does that have to happen? I mean, you know, we already mentioned we felt like, you know, the entire, you know, blue line as it stood right now was a little bit of a head scratcher, but how much of an impact? Are we talking like a Matt Carl impact? Do we have to go out and pick up a Matt Carl? You know, what kind of tinkering can we do to this blue line to improve it? Does it have to be that significant?
If I'm Ray Shearer, I'm not touching Matt Carl. I'll be honest. I mean, you're trying to move Paul Martin out. Why would you sign Paul Martin plus to an extensive contract? To me, that makes no sense. Carly Acovo, on the other hand, makes a lot of sense. I liked him a lot. He's the way he came out the first 2 months of the season, St. Louis. I mean, he was on fire throughout the year. It's a shame that Barrett Jackman re-signed with them, because he would be the absolute perfect hero for what the Penguins need right now. They need a guy who's, you know, he's got Orpik's physicality, but is a more focused, younger, and can skate in that 20 to 25 minute range, playing all three phases of the game, power play, PK, and top pairing, even strength. They need a guy like that. They need a guy who can come in and do it, because, you know, it's kind of been the elephant in the room. I'm not trying to, you know, bash Brooks Orpik or anything like that, but he really showed a lot of signs of age. And you have Letang, when Letang was healthy, looking like this all-world defenseman, skating all over the place, getting back, using his wheels to make big plays in his own zone and compensate for turnovers and that sort of thing. Especially down the stretch, you saw a lot of that. It just seems like Orpik was really struggling to keep up with that. And to me, that has got to be addressed. There has to be some kind of substantial presence put in that top four, because, you know, they can get through the regular season and do a great job. They can win the 60 games that Derek was talking about. At the end of the day, no one really cares about that, because they care about the 16 wins. Once it comes to that, and playoff hockey is just a different animal. It's just a different breed. And I look at this team the way it's structured right now, and this is a team, and I don't want to draw too many comparisons to those Capitals teams that were the same way, but it's the same concept. They're just better built for the regular season than they are the postseason.
Just real quick, Evil Shero with an absolutely unbelievable Photoshop. Have you seen this yet, guys?
No.
Check your Twitter. It's Ryan Suter on a tractor at the corner of Center and Fifth, driving into the parking lot of the Consol Energy Center. It's Ryan Suter on an orange tractor.
Oh, my
mowers
God.
Mowers and all.
God,
it is. Great. This is absolutely unbelievable work.
It's next
Galen's
level
work.
Stuff right there.
Just get out of here. Man.
That's
he's
hysterical.
You know, somebody, and let me ask you this, guys. I'm on a question-asking spree here, but we got a tweet here asking about Steve Sullivan. Is that such a terrible option at this point? What do you guys think about the option of, if everything else falls through, bringing Sullivan back for another year?
Here's the thing. I like Steve Sullivan. I think he, you know, he was serviceable. But I mean, is this guy? I mean, where's he fit? You know, if you bring him in, you put him on. I mean, you put him with Crosby. So you have Crosby, Sullivan, Dupuis. I mean, that's not a formidable line. And then you got to worry about his injuries and stuff like that. And quite honestly, you know, with Sullivan and Kennedy in the lineup, the Penguins might be fast, but they're not physical. And you need physical guys and bowels in the system. You know, somebody made a great point about the Rangers, I think it was. You know, they don't have – their forwards, I think they have like five forwards that are over 6'4". I mean, they just – they will pound you, grind you down. That's what you need in Biles and the system. You know, Sullivan, I think last year was his year. I think that was it. You know, I mean, he's a great locker room guy, it seems like, but I wouldn't – I'd stay away.
I'm in total 100% agreement with Derek on this. To me, when Steve Sullivan was brought in last year, I saw the cap hit per year, and I thought, you know, 1.5, that's not bad, one-year deal. You know, he's still got some ability. The power play needs a guy like that. You know, there's no question, you know, veteran presence in the locker room is always welcome, especially during a playoff run. But to me, he was a square peg in a round hole when dollars came to donuts in the postseason. I mean, it's like Derek was saying. I mean, he hit the nail right on the head. You have to be physical. You have to get the puck in deep. You got to forecheck. You got to work some cycle going, and you got to be able to be versatile to win in the postseason. If the other team wants to bang, you got to be able to bang back. They want to open it up and go finesse. You got to be able to do that. Steve Solomon, to me, especially at this point in his career, he's a one-trick pony. And to me, you can't have that when you're trying to improve on a bunch of different things, because scouting teams and scouting units around the league are smart. Coaches are smarter than they've ever been. Scouting, you know, programs and processes are more intelligent and more intuitive than they ever have been. If the Penguins bring back Steve Solomon, he's got to play in your top six. You can't have a guy like that in a checking line role. It just doesn't make that much sense. And to me, if he's playing with Malkin and Neal, he's not really creating any kind of space. And if you put him up there with Crosby, he's not really a finisher, which is what I think Sidney Crosby needs. I don't think that Crosby necessarily needs a pass-first guy that really isn't effective in the physical department.
Yeah, and you look back, though, he could have had a lot of goals. He just, especially in that beginning part of that season, he was so snake bit. I think his statistics lie a little bit. I mean, you got to bury the chances. I mean, that's why you play the game. But he wasn't a guy that, you know, was out of place. And then there's a whole story. I thought one of the funniest part of the years was when Phil Bork was saying that for the All-Star break, you know, obviously Sullivan came back and went on a tear after the All-Star game, and he said he was leaving, and he didn't tell anybody where he was going. And then when he came back, Borky said, you got to tell me where you were now. You're playing like this. And Sullivan's like, no, secret place. You know, I'm not giving it up. So, I mean, he kind of found the fountain of youth there towards the end of the year, showed a lot. So, I mean, it's not the worst idea in the world, but I think you guys, you know, kind of brought up there's more out there at this point. Let me throw out some names at you guys, and then you just give me a yes or a no on these. Okay, give you an idea of, you know, where we're at here overall, but just some available players that are out there, maybe on the free agency market here, aren't getting a lot of talk, and we'll just go ahead and kind of assume that maybe there's no Zach Parise. This is a big one, Joe. You might have a heart attack and die when I mention this. He had a huge year in Winnipeg. Kyle Wellwood.
I like it. I go yes.
Derek.
I don't know.
Like that's my response as well, because you know you're gonna. There's part of you that's gonna hate it. You know, you're not. It's that's why I picked it. I mean, it's such a tough one.
I'm gonna say no.
Yeah, when you look at the position he was in, and the fact that he really wasn't relied on in any kind of power play or offensive situation, you know, he wasn't really relied on to bring a lot of goals. He was more effective in Winnipeg than Jagr was in Philadelphia last year. I mean, 18 goals, 29 assists, plus 3 on an offensively inept team. I mean, the track record's there, and he's not really a scorer guy. But, I mean, if you get him for, like, 1.2, 1.5, I don't really think it's that bad. At least, God, I think that if he doesn't start scoring a lot, that probably forces Kennedy back in the top six. So, you know, I might say, yeah. Yeah,
my mom.
Yeah,
I agree with you there. I mean, you know, I would rather take Kyle Wellwood than I would Tyler Kennedy.
I agree with. Coming from you, Derek, that's not a shocker. I mean, I gotta tell you. All right, so let's talk about this one. Moving on, Mark Eaton.
No.
I like Eaton, but no, not way.
Not now.
No.
I think those best years. The best years might be a little bit behind him there.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one, and I'm just, again, it's talking defense here. Garnet Exelby, 1 or 2 years, maybe.
He's bottom. England's better than Garnet Exelby.
Yeah, Curtis Foster.
No. I like Curtis Foster. I like him, but. Again, I mean, you don't really need that. I mean, maybe he solidifies. If you found a way to get rid of Ben Lovejoy, yes. But, I mean, I don't know. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for that bottom. That bottom six pairing has cost the Penguins playoff series 3 straight years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
no, it's been brutal. I mean, it's been – you're absolutely right, man. It's been bad since the team was holding the cup over their head. But to me, Curtis Foster, at this point in his career, I'm not saying he's as bad as him, but it reminds me so much of when Shearer signed Martin Scola. It reminds me so much of that.
No,
thank you.
Remember
all
James
right, so what were you saying?
Do you remember Jay McKee, how embarrassing that was?
Oh, God.
Oh.
You get him on the one-year deal, and you're like, yeah,
he played
Walker.
So well in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a fixture. I think that was his last NHL season. I think they killed him. I think he just died.
Ryan Suter ran him over with the tractor.
My favorite part, most awkward moment with Jay McKee was opening night. Since he was like 74, he was right between Malkin and Crosby, and they had to announce his name right between that. Sorry.
Oh yeah, because of the numbers. And he hasn't played since. He hasn't played.
Marisen, Marisen out on Twitter says, when you're sad, just remember that James Neal only makes $500,000 more a year than Olli Jokinen. Okay, here's a name I want to get out there. Scott Hannon.
Again, I mean, it helps the bottom pair, but I don't. If you can move Martin out of town and you can bring in a legitimate top four guy and then you want to bring him in, I mean, my only issue with bringing a guy like Hannon in is you've got to make a bunch of trades. You've got, you know, 9 defensemen on the roster coming in. I mean, Strait's got to clear waivers now. Bortuzzo's got to clear waivers now.
Yeah.
They can't just send these guys down to Wilkes the way they did in the past. So they're going to have to make a couple of trades. I mean, Lovejoy on waivers, Englund on waivers. They're going to have to move some of these guys out. To me, I don't think Hannon is better than Bortuzzo's upside or Strait's upside.
Yeah.
Funny story about Scott Hannon. He was actually, if you guys remember Shiro's first, his first free agency, Scott Hannon was a huge, he got a huge contract there that year, and the Penguins were reportedly interested in him. Like, that was like a big, it was kind of like a little bit, he was like one of the first, he was like pre-Hossa, he's kind of one of the first people to spurn the Penguins in free agency after the lockout. It was really, I remember I was really disappointed. So, yeah, maybe, you know, he had some history with Shearer. Maybe, you know, Shearer takes a flyer on him. But I kind of agree with Joe. I mean, it's almost impossible to keep, you know, you can't, it's not really worth getting a stock gag type of guy on defense right now because, you know, I mean, you don't want to overpay for him. And then, like, you know, you'll have to send guys down to the waivers and stuff. I mean, it's kind of brutal. But then again, you know, I mean, Do you really trust this defense going into this season? Do you trust them? I can't say that I do. I don't know.
No, I don't. I don't either. They've got to. To me, if they don't address the top four, the team's a lost cause this year. I'm not trying to sound totally negative, but I'm sorry. But you go down the stretch, 58-44, 7-2. That's your top four. That's hideous, guys. That's ugly. That's if you look at Philly with them acquiring Luke Shen and what their defense is. Their defense isn't, you know, I'm not talking like mid-90s Colorado Avalanche or something like that, but that's what they're going to look like next to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big deal. That's a really big deal. All right, here's one. This may make you want to vomit. It could. There's a serious chances that's going to happen. You know, you talk about size, you know, everybody, you know, Hal Gill was a name that came up, you know, whenever this free agency period started, and a lot of people said, you know, the Penguins need that size. Is Milan Urchina an upgrade at all?
Oh, God, no. No.
No, please, no. I'm getting my gag reflexes.
I just want to make sure that was the response I was going to get. That's fine. Yeah. Had a decent end of the year, but no, I'd rather have Ben Lovejoy in there.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's saying something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Ben
All right, so moving from one former Devil to another, Jamie Langenbrunner.
Yeah.
I like Langenbrunner. Good player.
I don't know where he fits, though. Well, you could play him on the top line, right? I mean, I don't know if he can handle those minutes, but I think he's a guy that could at least intermittently take top line duty with, I guess I would assume it would be Crosby and Dupuis. I don't know how much of a fit that is, though. I mean, yeah, is that even something that's feasible? Is that line even mesh? It seems like such a bizarre trio of players. But, you know, could be a guy that could merit, you know, some thought, at least, if the Parise thing doesn't go through. I think he's 36 in an unbelievable year last year.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing that at least I think gives you a little bit of upside about Langenbrunner is the skill is probably where Sullivan's physical play is at this point in his career, just talking about, you know, a scale of 1 to 10 quality there. But I think his physical play is where Sullivan's skill is. I think at least Langenbrunner gives you a guy that can create some space. I think you put him on that second line if need be. You know, to me, even if Parise signs, I would still try to work something out to where you could flip, you know, like a Kennedy as part of a deal, as part of a, you know, the Martin deal, try to clear some more cap space. To me, I would go after Langenbrunner even if the Penguins were to get Kennedy, because at his, you know, at his age, he hasn't scored a ton in the last couple of years, you know, since he was acquired by Dallas, you know, then last year St. Louis, he hasn't scored a lot. I think you put him on that second line with Malkin and Neal. He gives you not only a nice veteran presence, but a guy that can still, you know, kind of forecheck and play a physical game still at his age.
Yeah, it's a trickle-down effect, too, because you had a guy like that, you know, somebody's got to move down a line, you know. That somebody just might become Pascal Dupuis, who's coming off his best offensive season ever. Putting him on a third line with a – you know, this is totally diverging off topic, and we're going to get into a debate about Tyler Kennedy here, but if you look at the third line, I mean, Matt Cook, even the new Matt Cook, solid player, I mean, gives you a lot. I mean, he wasn't non-existent last year in the physicality department. Was he off from where he normally is? Absolutely. But he gave you a good bit of offense, and, you know, what you lost in that sandpaper, you got back in some goals, which is certainly nice. But look at that. Like, so you got Cook there, great in both ends of the ice, player's player. Brandon Sutter, I think people in Pittsburgh are going to love him. One guy I really haven't talked about a whole lot. If you're saying you have to replace Jordan Staal and you can't use Ryan Kessler, that's probably one of the names that's going to come up anyway, right? I mean, Sutter's probably a guy you're going to mention. But then you move over to the other side of that line, and it's just there's Tyler Kennedy. You know, it's like – You still can remember the goals, you know, that he scored 2 years ago, and he did it at a key time. They needed those goals then. So you still remember that, but then, you know, last year creeps into your mind, and that salary cap, $2 million hit. It's a lot of money. So, you know, you get the trickle-down effect there where now your third line, I mean, you think about the possibility of Dupuis playing alongside Sutter and Cook. That's one heck of a third. You got three guys right there who you know are going to be in the defensive zone every shift. You want to talk about a pure defensive line. That's stifling. You know, I don't know that you get that with Tyler Kennedy. So, you know, there's something to what you guys are saying. I mean, if you're going to try to make a move, you know, Sherrod said he wants to move a defenseman. You know, I don't know what you can get. You know, you're talking about moving Kennedy and, you know, maybe one of your bottom guys, but, you know, that third line has the potential to be lethal if you get a guy like a Langenbrunner that can play in the top six. You're always going to have Kunitz move up. He's going to stay in there. That means somebody's got to come out. In all likelihood, that would be, you know, Pascal Dupuis. But what do you do about Tyler Kennedy this year?
I think you got to flip him. I don't see how Shiro, if he's going to make a deal, can't at least, at the very worst case scenario, say, okay, look, if I'm going to trade you Brian Strait, at least take this guy off my hands.
Yeah.
I just can't see that scenario where he doesn't, at least in a couple teams, I have to also imagine, because the fact is he's still pretty young, I have to imagine there's some team that could see, you know, like a cap floor team, like a Florida or someone like that could stick him on the third line or something like that and have a little value and not really have to worry about the fact that he's not good enough to play in the top six, but his salary kind of in his resume kind of indicates that he probably should be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, here's the thing about Palakai. Okay, oh, great. You know, he had his 20-goal year. The guys, he's been around. He's played some big games. But, you know, he's always been kind of Jordan Staal's sidekick. And, you know, Staal did a lot of work to make him look good. And now that Staal's not there, I mean, how can anybody have any confidence in Tyler Kennedy this season? I mean, if you pay him $2 million, he's got to get the 20 goals. He's got to get there. That's what he scored to earn the contract.
I feel like that has to happen. And I don't even mean in the sense that the Penguins need those goals. They don't. That just has to take place. He has got to score 20 goals this year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you there.
And I mean,
33 points is a joke for him.
It is. And you know, to his defense this year, I mean, he kind of got derailed with the whole maybe concussion thing, and I think he had another injury shortly thereafter or before. I can't remember. So, I mean, to his defense, it's a big year for him. But, I mean, still, I mean, I look at the size of a guy and in this day and age, and you look at some of the teams. You look at the cup winners, and these guys have big guys on their teams. You know, I mean, look at the Kings. They were huge. They're huge,
yeah.
And they're physical. I mean, a guy like Tyler Kennedy could not play for the Los Angeles Kings. He could not play for the Boston Bruins. He couldn't. And I mean,
no.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just you feel bad for saying that because you know he did win a cup. You know, he went to two cups, but I'm
scored
not sure.
A huge goal in Game Six.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a legendary goal, but I'm not so sure how much of that wasn't playing with Jordan Staal. At that point, when Jordan Staal was the monster in those series against Detroit, you know, I just don't know how much of that was there. I don't know. And that was, you know, also, what, 3-4 years ago at this point. I think a lot has changed in terms of, I think guys just got beefed up when it comes. You need a really physical third line. Yeah, I that's why Detroit, great signing. And you'll watch it this season, Jordan Tutu in Detroit. That's a great signing for that team. They're going to be.
It's a good signing. I think that they paid him a little bit too much money.
Yeah.
I think that was a little bit too much for me. But, yeah, I mean, when's the last time Detroit had that on their team?
Right.
You know?
Oh.
In regards to Tyler Kennedy, though, the one thing about Brandon Sutter, there's a lot of similarities between he and Jordan Staal, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Skating isn't one of them. I can tell you that. And it's not that Staal was a bad skater. He certainly wasn't. But his way to get from point A to point B entirely mm-hmm. different than Brandon Sutter's. Totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, Brandon Sutter's going to come right at you. But he's got speed. He's got that top end speed. You know, where Jordan Staal took him a while to get going. You know, but once he did, you weren't knocking him over. You know, but Sutter's
right.
more of a guy who wants to get up the ice really fast. And I think that's. You know, we all know Dan Bylsma is getting north, you know, north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5,000 times a night. But Sutter needs that guy that's going to get him that puck. I don't think it's Tyler Kennedy. I don't think it's him.
He has no offensive, and I say this, and I've watched every single one of his shifts. I always do, just because I'm waiting for the onslaught of tweets I get, which are hilarious when he scores. It's like my favorite thing. Like, I mean, I secretly act like I hate it, but I think it's hilarious. And just watching him, he has no vision. He's so one-dimensional. You know, he'll shoot the puck. No talent when it comes to passing. You have to have that breakout pass in Bylsma's system right off the boards there. And more times than not, he misses that pass.
Yeah.
And once he misses that pass, the system completely falls down. I mean, he was non-existent in the Flyer series. He wasn't ready. He was just not even. He got worked over. I went back and watched a couple games. Oh my God! I mean, it was just like he was looked afraid. He looked afraid to play.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, that series is it does personify. You kind of. I don't like to put too much stock in just one series, but. Pretty much every glaring weakness on the Pens, and pretty much you got to see the worst part of everyone in that series. And Kennedy, you know, Kennedy's upside is this guy who can flirt with, you know, 50 to 55 points, he's going to make $2 million a year. He's got a lot of experience. He typically, it seems like he doesn't really cause any problems in the locker room. He's, you know, he does his thing. But you see him at his worst, at his basement. You sit there and say, how did this guy get out of Wilkes-Barre and win a Stanley Cup and be part of multiple deep playoff runs? I don't see it. He's too frustrating to me. In my opinion, I don't think Kennedy's ever really going to get out of this funk to where he's a consistent player in the top nine for a team like Pittsburgh. So to me, I don't think his value is ever going to be higher than it is right now. And I think you have to at least find some kind of team out there who values him and still thinks that he can kind of live up to that upside on a regular basis. And you got to get something, even if it's a third-round draft pick, you got to get something, because $2 million, a lot of these guys you're talking about, like a Scott Hannon or a Carlo Colaiacovo or something like that, even if the team were to get a top-four defenseman, they could be using that $2 million on something other than that. I mean, Tanner Glass has probably got
Brad
more
Brad Boies, $1 million.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's an interesting contract.
Lawson Dress, 1.2.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, one of the things I watched at the game one against Philadelphia was, number one, bench matchups. That's all I was reading about. It was just watching what was going to happen there. Without diverging, you know, too much into that, you know, I think that Dan Bylsma did get away from it the longer the game went on in each game. In game one, I thought he did a masterful job. In fact, that icing call that led to the first Penguins goal in game one, that was all Bylsma using the bench to his advantage there. A line change created the icing call, and then he used the icing call to his advantage to exploit the Flyers' fourth line. But anyway, getting back on track, you know, and the other thing we watched too besides the bench matchups was defensive zone coverage, right? Because everybody knew that the Flyers were going to come straight to the net. You know, that wasn't a secret.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't hard to figure that out. And, you know, one of the things you always compliment Jordan Staal on is the amount of ice he can cover in one game, right? He's everywhere, both zones. And you know, he took a lot of flack for that overtime goal, but the number of times he bailed out Tyler Kennedy in that game was astonishing. I mean, you see Staal pick his head up and look around and be like, oh, my God, what? You know, I have to get over there. You know, I have to engage this man. Where is everybody, you know? So it was like a shock to see that. It was like, man, and now you have Brandon Sutter, who's, you know, unbelievable in both zones. But now, like, he's going to have to learn that the hard way, you know, and if that doesn't get addressed, you know, Sutter's not going to have that instantaneous instinct to look over to the side of the ice and be like, I better get over here. You know, I don't think that's just something that you develop after, you know, 10 games. So, I mean, it's certainly, you know, you look at the offense, even without a guy like Zach Parise, you bring somebody, you know, even smaller in, you know, like a Langenbrunner or whatever we mentioned, you still got a really good top six. I mean, your second line is, you know, better than most first lines on most teams, you know, without question. And then, you know, if it's healthy Sidney Crosby there, you know, I mean, you get out of town, you know, that's just ridiculous still. So, but then you further down you go. I mean, the fourth line you would assume is going to be what, you know, Vitaly, Adams, and Glass. That's just unbelievable.
That's a good
fantastic
line.
Trio. But then you look at that third line and you just look at that one wing spot. And you're like, man, you know, that's a serious issue there. So
it doesn't make
anyway.
Sense. It doesn't make sense. And you know, you just have to wonder. Like, I mean, I don't know. Did the Penguins get better in this offseason? That's what you'll ask yourself. And
yeah.
I mean, right now the answer is no, right? I mean, they traded Jordan Staal, and I think I am in the position that I'm glad that they traded Jordan Staal. I didn't want to see him losing for nothing, but you know, you're also putting a potential 70-point guy. I think Brandon Sutter will be a perfect. I think they needed to change the system. I think Sutter is going to be. I think in 2 years he could be a selfie candidate. He's going to have a monster year. I totally agree with that. He's the compliment that Crosby and Malkin need, and I think he's going to play big minutes. And I think it's a great signing. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, did they get better? And right now, I'm not seeing. I mean, their defense is weaker. They got rid of McCullough for absolutely nothing at all. Clear salary dump. And their offense is now missing a 65-point score.
Yeah.
The guy can put 30 goals in. I mean, it's kind of a sickening feeling right now. Just, I mean, I think this team still can win the Atlantic Division, but I mean, it's gonna be really, really interesting to see if they don't get Parisi or Suter, how they go. What do you guys? I mean, I'm just throwing this out there just because I want to hear you guys gasp in horror. What about a guy like Semin?
Yeah, we talked about it earlier.
Yeah. I
do a one-year deal.
Yeah, one or two at the most. Two at the most. He just, man. I told Joe about it was I said that when you play in this team, forechecking isn't an optional part of it. You know, the entire point of the Penguins' offense is to get in deep and just take that easy play away. Don't give them it. You know, to get everybody get on the boards, go to the puck, and we're going to slow this thing down and grind this thing out. You know, just imagine a guy like Semin coming with speed and then a Crosby dumping that puck and like a nice soft dump into the corner.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, I just feel like it's a battle that's going to get lost.
Right. Yeah, no, I know. I agree. I don't think that. I don't think the money. I mean, what do you do with Ray? If you're Ray Shiro, what do you do with the money? I mean, because
that's the point. Would you make a salary dump? You have to do something.
Exactly. I mean, so like he had to do this. I don't know if he saw this coming. I don't know if they kind of thought it was like a done deal with Parisi or Suter. Like it's just so strange to me. It's so uncharacteristic of Shiro just to get rid of, just to kind of drop McCullough. I mean, you know, I don't know. What do you do with that money? Where does that, like, you know what I mean? That's my only thing is, like, you just don't want to throw that. Now you have some cap space. You have $10 million in cap space. I mean, do you just eat it and just say, oh, well, you know, maybe next season we'll, you know, make a run at Shane Weber or something like that. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because people, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine earlier, and he was like, you know, you look at the offensive numbers and everything last year with Pittsburgh, they don't need Parise, they don't need an offensive guy like that. And I argued back with him. I said, yes, they do. They absolutely need a guy like that because you take a look at what's, you know, where things are. James Neal didn't even score 30 goals before this past season. I don't think he's going to have a bad year. I think he'll still score 30 to 35, but he's going to regress a little bit. It's just a lot of averages. There were times last year where they were relying on Pascal Dupuis and that massive scoring streak that he went on. He's not going to be the biggest scoring streak in the NHL again. That's not the way Pascal Dupuis works. Chris Kunitz has been, other than last season, has been an injury liability for some time. You don't know how Sidney Crosby is going to react to a first full season. You assume that it's going to be extremely positive, and I think, you know, by realistic assumption, that it's going to be. Malkin could regress a little bit. I mean, I think he's as dynamic as any player in the league, but still, guys usually don't put up, you know, that massive amount of points, you know, multiple years in a row, especially if Neal takes a step back, and he's probably, you know, collateral damage in that regard. You know, to me, offensively, and not even for this season, to me, you got to get Parise because if you can anyway, you know, who knows what he wants to do. But if you can, I think you have to do it because it's a long-term thing and it gives you that long-term option. If you draft and develop properly with all these prospects, the D help will be there eventually. You might have to go through some growing pains this season, but it will fix itself eventually. And let's face it, if you're drafting and developing isn't working out with big-time prospects and first-round picks and all that stuff, and Bo Bennett, when he comes into the picture, and Pouliot, Mauro, Mata, you know, Harrington, the list goes on and on. If these guys don't develop into what you draft them for anyway, you're not going to win long-term anyhow.
Yeah, I agree. I think I have to agree with you.
But the good thing is that if the Parise thing falls through, I mean, Derek, you mentioned there's $10 million floating around out there. I mean, you're not just going to sit on it. There's still, you know, Shane Doan's out there. I think you know, I know. Yeah, you hate that.
He's so bizarre.
We're going to get into that in a second. But, yeah, I mean, it's not the worst possibility in the world. I think that the money's going to get spent. I think that of all the, you know, we know Suter's not going to go back to Nashville. You know, that's pretty much a given at this point. I think that there's still a strong possibility that Parise goes back to New Jersey. I know, Derek, you said you've already resigned to that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of all the guys that are most likely to leave, despite the fact that he's played there for so long, I think Shane Doan's one of them. Now, Derek, go back to the start of 2011. Just forget the playoffs. Is it the handshake that did it for you?
It was the game that the Coyotes were in Pittsburgh, I think. And from the second period on, Shane Doan played like a total jerk off. I don't know what he was doing. He just was he just pissed me off so much. Like I was just like I couldn't take it anymore. So I mean, but here's the thing. Let me preface this like this. I did not like Bill Guerin either, and
yeah.
He turned out to be probably one of my favorite like acquisitions of all time. So you know, I mean, yeah, you could be, you know, if you're looking for somebody to stabilize, and if somebody has a drive and massive leadership skills, you know, why not take a flyer on Shane Doan? I can't say. It would take me like a couple weeks. Not that my feelings need to be rectified by anything, but. I think we could rally behind. Looking at things not personally with Shane Doan, I think it would be. It's really the only logical choice left at this point.
Yeah, and the Coyotes aren't out there asking for a loan, you know. And Zach Parise, you know, Minnesota's not so bad. He'd be like, oh my god, like he's never going to win there, you know. They've got a lot of work to do, but Chuck Fletcher obviously means business. There's no question about that. New Jersey, again, just a year removed from the Stanley Cup final, not even. So I think that of all the guys out there that need the championship the most, and you talk about with Parise, you know, everybody says, well, you have the chance to win in Pittsburgh. That's going to resonate more with anybody than Shane Doan. I mean, it's just not.
Yeah.
He's never even, you know, he sniffed it this year. But, you know, he's not had that deep run. It just hasn't existed for him. So I think if you're talking about luring a guy to your city because they have a chance to win, that's pretty much the epitome of it right there. You know, and then
that's true.
Right, and then God, the Semmons thing still's out there. And how bizarre is it? You know, you always hear this insider time now. You know, everybody is a hockey insider is coming out of the woodwork, but you keep seeing his name brought up with Pittsburgh next to it. I mean, you really legitimately do. And from big-time people. You know, I'm not talking about Hockey Insider or, you know, I'm not talking about that guy. I mean, like, legit big-time people are saying, hey, this is a possibility here. You know, it's such a bizarre situation. I mean, you know, if you don't get Parise and then you end up with Semin.
Yeah. I mean, you have to pay him $5 million. I mean, you have to pay him $5 million. And, I mean, the guy can score. The guy could probably score. If he bought in, he could probably score 40, 50. He could probably score 50 goals on Cosby.
Throw 50 out there. Throw it out. Because everybody's thinking
it. Could.
That's not a casual thing that people do every day. Let's we know that. But, I mean, Sidney Crosby's unbelievable, guys. I mean, the stuff that he does, he just doesn't happen in the National Hockey League. It doesn't. That's the thing. When you look at go back to the streak, you know, everything he touches goes in the net somehow.
Yeah.
So for a guy like Semin, first of all, James Neal's shot is one of the most violent shots in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, consensus. Semin's shot makes Neal's look like Kennedy's, you know? It basically like it was a Kyle Kennedy to the buck. I mean, he can rip it. Go. And Joe, here's the thing. His command is there. You know, James Neal's got that velocity. And I think, by the way, let me just side note, I think there was too much made in Pittsburgh media about Neal choosing where he was going to shoot this year. I think the big difference is the puck hit the net. It hit the net. You know, I don't think James Neal's sitting there like, I'm going to...
it also, when you have Evgeny Malkin, I mean, Malkin's, his ability to put that puck and the limited, like, Neil didn't even need that much space, but Malkin gave him that much space. And Malkin, he puts his passes on Neil's stick. I mean, those guys had an uncanny chemistry. But I wonder if Neil, and I'm a big fanboy of the Neil-Malkin connection, but if you sign Semmons, maybe you put Neil with Crosby and then Semmons with Malkin.
Oh, man, you just took my next – you took where I was going with my next one. That's exactly what I'm thinking here. I mean, okay, look at it like this. This is my take on Semmons, really, when it comes down to it. It's the Semmons to Pittsburgh thing. If you can get him on a one-year – if you lose out on Parise, I think you have to go Semmons on a one-year deal. I don't go any more than that. I just do what Detroit did with Hossa, give him a one-year deal. And the reason why I do that is because you've got this cap space. If you don't get some kind of legit top six wing that can, you know, burn down CC with some awesome skill, then the Mahalik trade just looks like a complete waste of time, and there's egg all over Shiro's face. If you bring him in on a one-year deal and he totally just sets the world on fire, then that's great. You can do that, and he might be able to be even a nice stopgap until Bo Bennett's ready, you know, maybe even on another one-year deal. If he comes in and just completely stinks the joint up, he's in an expiring contract and he still has trade value. You can move him for something and at least kind of recoup on your loss a little bit, and you've still got that same cap space available in 2013 to give Malkin a new deal, to be able to tag the new deal.
And I say this it's not an indictment of Gino by any stretch of the imagination, but he'd love that. I mean, that'd be, you'd be making him brim ear to ear. You know, that'd be the best thing that ever happened to him. That'd be great. But the thing is, with Semmons, you know, again, the offensive system in Pittsburgh, you don't just get to pick and choose when you're going to play. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
Point blank, period.
Right.
That's not going to fly here. Dan Bylsma, player's coach, right? I mean, he won a Jack Adams trophy. Is he a guy? He gets the most out of the least. I think it's agreeable. Matt Cook is a perfect example of that. Pascal Dupuis, perfect example of that. He gets the most out of the least. This is that case. Mm-hmm. But the least in this case is, one, forechecking ability, and two, defensive presence. And I don't mean defensive awareness. There's a difference. I'm talking about actually finding the zone first, right? Like, there's this area on the other side of the red line, okay, it's when other teams attacking, you know, like very basic build this from the ground up type stuff. Like, you know, there's a whole other game that exists when you're not in the offensive zone here. Like, this is, look at this crazy world that there is. But when you look, first of all, put him on a power play for sure. Just rip pucks from that half wall all day, because he's got Neil's velocity. But here's what's killer, is his command is better. That's crazy to think about. Like, you know, he's not a guy that can't pass the puck either. I mean, he doesn't get enough credit for his playmaking ability. I don't think it's his go-to. I think that's the thing. But his command and his velocity, arguably better than any other player in the league when he just really rips it. You put him on the power play, you know, you got that there. And you put a guy like, you know, Derek, you said it's a magical ability to just sneak that puck through. You know, he just finds him. And for him to just be able to just, Gino just lob those, you know, layups up for him, that's unbelievable. You know, but,
How many times have we seen in the NHL and in sports even in general, a guy just needs a new place? You know, a guy just needs a new place to play. It's not, you know, I mean, it's not an indictment. I mean, Washington, you know, whatever, is, you know, he had some good years in Washington, but Washington is also a completer when it comes to coaching the last couple of years there. I mean, it's not been a good situation. It's been very, I would say, borderline toxic. And, you know, maybe he just needs a new place to play. I mean, I'm not really saying, you know, because a lot of Washington Capitals bloggers are friends of mine, and, you know, they basically say, hey, look, you know, you're getting what you get here. You can't change it. But that said, you know, like you said, his release is so dynamic, and his shot is so scary. If you give, and the Penguins have a very solid locker room. You know, I mean, if there's any locker room that could absorb a guy like Simmons, it might be the Penguins. And, you know, the only bad thing about it is you almost worry about a guy like Simmons infecting Malkin. You know what I mean? Malkin's such a solid citizen of, like, really a non-European type of guy when it comes to being unselfish. You wonder what Simmons could possibly, you know, infect him with. That's my biggest fear.
You're in the NHL, your captain's a representation of the rest of your team.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. Look at the Kings, Dustin Brown. What a guy.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, a player's player. Now look at Washington.
Exactly.
Your captain
is a cheap joke.
You know, it's kind of a cheap sideshow joke. Not to be funny, but, I mean, there's nothing, you don't say Alex Ovechkin is, oh my God, leadership. You know, that's the first thing that comes to your mind. So,
true.
You know, I think we got a really good view on 24/7 of how that locker room was. I mean, you know, the whole, you know, grab your sack and, you know, the whole nine yards. And here's the thing about Dale Hunter, okay? The guy left for a reason, you know. Let's be real here. You know, everybody's like, well, what Dale Hunter did worked. No, it didn't work because, number one, the team didn't win. And number two, you know, let's start there. But number two, what he did didn't work if Ovechkin's riding a pine in the third period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say the word work means you got your superstar playing 25, 30 minutes a night. You know, he's scoring goals and he's, you know, doing everything he needs to do. That didn't happen. So, you know, I would, you know, you could almost say Derek said it, guy needs a new place to play. Here's the thing. This locker room that the Penguins have, that kind of stuff's not going to go over. It's just not.
Right.
And I think that Gino at this point, with the year that he had, I mean, like Joe said, put the same kind of points up two times in a row is tough to do. But I don't expect Gino to go away. I think he learned a very valuable lesson about what you do in the off season ultimately makes or breaks your regular season. So I don't think he'd expect it, but, you know, you're on the hook. Alex Semin's not Steve Sullivan. You can't put him on the third line, you know, when you're not happy with the way he's playing. It's just not going to work.
Yeah,
you're killing your third line, you know.
Yep.
So
you can't hide him.
How much faith do you have in Dan Bylsma, Joe? That's really what it comes down to for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's tremendous points. I mean, my first thing that I have to think about, and I think about this kind of from a comedic perspective, is do you remember the comments that Alex Semin made about Sidney Crosby?
Oh, I don't see what's so special.
He could end up playing with him. But then again, if Aaron Ashman and Matt Cook can rekindle what they kind of had wrong between them, I have to think that Semin and Crosby could work out. I mean, when it all comes down to it, I mean, you talked about the L.A. Kings and Dustin Brown and the effect that your captain has on the team. When Jeff Carter was in Philadelphia, the Philly fans, you talk to any Philly fan, I mean, he might as well have been a roll of Charmin out there for how many times they called him soft. I mean, he was couldn't forecheck, couldn't backcheck, couldn't do this enough to play wing, couldn't do this enough to play center and everything, and they're in that kind of, you know, weird, the whole dry island thing and all that controversy. You bring him into Los Angeles, which played, you know, a pretty physical style of game, let's just be honest. That's how they were able to completely, you know, kick the hell out of Vancouver in the first round. Jeff Carter had 13 points in 20 games during that playoff run. You get 13 points in 20 games in this league, you're doing pretty well in the postseason. I mean, that's a big-time catalyst for winning. The physical stuff is there. I mean, to me, if you lose out on Parise and you pulled all this stuff, you trade Jordan Staal and everything, I mean, at the moment, the Penguins basically swapped Jordan Staal and Zebnik Mihalik for Tanner Glass and Brandon Sutter.
I don't want to interrupt you. I don't want to interrupt you, Joe, but I just looked this up because it was driving me crazy. Alexander Semin. Last year, 2011, 77 games, 21 goals, 33 assists. Okay. 2010, 28 goals, 28 assists. 2009, 40-44. I'm gonna ask you this question. He played 77 games, okay, without looking it up. Guess how many hits you think he had?
68.
Probably less than 20.
20, Derek?
Yeah.
Joe, what do you got?
Off of 65.
31.
Oh.
Listen, this is going to blow your mind.
Brutal.
Listen, NHL totals, 469 games played, 88 hits.
Oh my God!
Center
got 169 last year.
Yeah, that's you're not going to play in damn balls of the system. You know what I mean. You're just not gonna play in damn balls of the system.
469 NHL games. 469 NHL games. 46 blocked shots.
That's vomit inducing.
You'd think that you'd be able to. I mean. You know, you think it's unbelievable. And let's just to compare that. I mean, you think you'd accidentally block more shots than that? Honestly, I mean, that's 40, it's 46. You think by accident you just happen to get in the way? So here's Zach Parise, 82 games played last year, 65 hits. So it's double what Simon had. All right.
Yeah.
39 block shots. That is the total of Simon's career in one season. Unbelievable.
I mean, really, when you think about it, I'm going around the league and I'm thinking everyone. I literally cannot think, given the fact of thinking of Crosby's skill set and Dan Bylsma's system, I cannot think of a better fit than Zach Parise at the wing. Not in the entire league. I can't think of a single player who I think fits better on that top line right wing than Zach Parise.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. I think it's going to be unfortunate. It's going to be unfortunate that he's kind of going to get either talked into going to Minnesota or going back to New Jersey. Because I mean, it would be a really special. It would almost be unfair. And I think the Penguins would just waltz. I mean, they would waltz for the regular season. They might have a tough matchup in the playoffs somewhere, but there's so much leadership, so much ability. Him and Crosby would just grind the hell out of anybody. Those two. But you know, that's the problem is that, you know, it's just, you come to Pittsburgh, you're never going to be the guy. Some guys in Parise, he wants to be the guy, you know, I mean, and it's not ego related, I don't think. And I think it's just a will. I mean, you're never going to be above Crosby or Malkin in Pittsburgh. It's never going to happen.
No.
And I mean,
there's no way.
You know what I mean? You just won't do it. And it's not going to be. It's not realistic. And you got to think. You got to wonder if Parise. I know I'm totally digressing here, but you got to wonder if Parise is thinking to himself. You know, is everybody in the NHL going to think I'm a? Is everybody thinking I can't win it by myself and I have to go rely on Crosby and Malkin to do it? Because you know that
right.
would be the chirp. You know that would be people saying, oh, you couldn't win in New Jersey, so you had to go play with these two guys. You know, like anybody else wouldn't do that. I mean, I would. I wouldn't even – you wouldn't even have to ask me. I don't care what my wife would say. I'd be playing with the two best players in the world and go out and win 3-4 cups and be a dynasty. But
do you know what people said about Messier, though? Do you think people said about Messier?
Nah, I think that's a great example. Because, I mean, Messier – I mean, but you know, Messier only won cup. He won two cups without Gretzky. I think he did.
Yeah. The last one, and then the one in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. So he won two cups without Gretzky. So he kind of was, you know, he could be the guy. You know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just. It's weird. It's a weird thing. You wonder if, I mean, because Minnesota. I think there will be. I don't know what you guys think. I think Minnesota will be a contender if they got Parise and Suter. If they get Parise, I think they're maybe a playoff team every other year. I mean, that team's a mess. They're paying Tom Gilbert $4 million a year.
I got into it with another guy the other day where I said that I thought that they were at least 2 to 3 years away. Look at right now. This is their depth chart right now.
Oh, it's funny. Go ahead.
And some of these guys they haven't even re-signed. Right. You lost Lasse Andres, right?
Mm-hmm.
You lost another big loss to them, Eric Christensen. Devastating. Nick Johnson is unrestricted still. He hasn't been signed. You have Matt Cassian, Jason Zucker, who's played all of two games.